The Great Lakes, the Arctic and Antarctica, iconic destinations around the world. Viking offers opportunities for discovery with a shore excursion in every port. Learn more at viking.com.
Ross's rapscallion army buddy, Colonel Ned Despard, is free from prison and a man about town, but he's not entirely welcome in every circle.
You go crawl back under your stone, Hansen. Rest assured you'll be made to pay.
Ned, be calm. Come on, Reno. It's time we go.
Meanwhile, in the London judicial system, Dr. Dwight is welcomed as an expert witness on mental illness, expanding his rudimentary and revolutionary new approaches to psychological care.
My lord, we have heard the defendant plead not guilty on the grounds of insanity. But how do we define insanity?
For the bereft Sir George, such gentle mental care might be of good use. His repeated conversations with his dead wife have led Uncle Carrie to take matters into his own hands.
Do I care what Ross would entertain? Have I not a mind of my own?
Sir, I beg your indulgence, but I cannot allow my nephew to sign this document.
I'm Barrett Brontes, and this is Mining Polder, a podcast from Masterpiece. Even though she's barely seen this season, Hayda Reid is a big part of the Poldark story, and has been from the very beginning. She joined my Masterpiece colleague, Jace Lacob, and discussed what it meant to be a ghostly Elizabeth for a change.
When you were told that, despite being killed off last season, Elizabeth Warleggan would be returning to Poldark, what were those conversations with Debbie Horsfield and the producers like?
I feel like Debbie always had a plan for her to have some kind of place in the last series. But I wasn't, like, no one really knew until she wrote it. And, you know, I didn't have an option to do the fifth series anyway, so it could have just evaporated. So I wasn't sure until, I think, probably just a month or two before. So, it wasn't a done deal.
I mean, when we sat down last time, I asked, we've seen that the dead can return on Poldark, at least in flashbacks. Is there any chance you might be back in season 5 for another flashback? And your response was, I don't know if I can comment on that.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know then that you'd be back in some capacity?
If I said that, I probably had an idea. I think I was waiting around that time. I think I was waiting to be told, you know, we need you back for this. And I was hoping, because it's nice to be part of the whole thing. I mean, I'm not entirely a part of the fifth season, but to be able to say that you were in 5 is quite nice since, you know, I was in it from the beginning.
Well, she is such a pivotal, important part of the show. Mm-hmm. Her death sort of hangs over things anyway. But I think having your presence on the show in that kind of ghostly vision way, mm-hmm. I think did bring things kind of full circle for that character.
Yeah, I think it was just also very nice for, not nice for George, but nice for Jack in terms of like just getting quite a lot of interesting things to play with in that last season, and just for people to really see the sort of human, fragile side of him and how much Elizabeth really meant to him, you know, and how she was kind of his heart, you know.
Which is worse, burying a child or leaving one behind? She did not deserve her fate.
Nor did her children.
How did you approach this version of the character as Elizabeth herself, a ghost, a vision, a figment of George's imagination, or something altogether different?
I've never thought of it as a ghost. I remember I had a lot of people always say, oh, you're going to come back as a ghost, or you're going to come back as a ghost, or even when it happened, oh, Elizabeth is a ghost. But I've never thought of it that way. And I don't think Debbie's thought of it that way. I think it's about George's mental breakdown and his actual hallucinations.
George, will you not say goodnight to your son?
Elizabeth.
Sir?
Thank you, Bessie. Goodnight, boy.
Goodnight, Papa.
He's not dealing with the death of Elizabeth, and he, in order to cope, he just sees her. So my approach to Elizabeth in those episodes were just the way that George would see her, which would be, you know, perfect and warm and, you know, just whatever he needed in that time. So there wasn't much kind of emotional background for me as the character, because I was kind of approaching it from being a figment of his imagination, basically. You know, it was all to serve his vision.
I mean, in saying that, she is this sort of sainted version of Elizabeth. Mm. She is on this pedestal. I mean, what is the challenge then in playing someone else's conception of a character you've played for 4 years?
I think the way I approached it was just the sort of best bits of her. The stuff, because, you know, Elizabeth was very good at masks and very good at showing the world kind of what she wanted them to see. And so it was just that version. It was just kind of the best version of Elizabeth, where you don't get to see any of her fragility or weakness.
She's perfect in death.
Of course. I mean, I feel like we put people on a pedestal, whether they're passed away or whether they're not in our lives anymore. A lot of the times we think of them as, you know, saints.
Let's hold on for a second and take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
Coming up next on Masterpiece on PBS, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office continues Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, followed by the finale of Alice and Jack at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central.
What did you make of the way that the show used George's grief to engineer a way to bring Elizabeth back into the fold, both in the thematic sense and a personal one for you? I mean, it meant you being able to come back to Poldark.
Yeah, it was, first of all, I thought it was a beautiful way to tell a story from George's perspective, of just for him to have more humanity and to see that he truly faced with the worst thing that could ever happen to him in his life, and kind of makes him reassess everything. But for me, it was just really nice to come back because, it wasn't a done deal. They've really, truly been like family, and Jack specifically has been one of the most amazing partners I've ever worked with and ever will be, and is a very dear friend of mine. And so it was just like coming home, to be honest. People kept asking, what's it like to be back? And I was like, the same. Like, it feels the same because it feels like home, so it doesn't feel weird. Except that there were lots of new people that I'd never seen before. And I was like, oh. And I met my son, Jeffrey Charles, who's, I mean, you know, 25 or something at this point, somehow.
That's hysterical. Mm. You're in these scenes, but also not in these scenes. Mm-hmm. The only character who can see you is George,
yeah,
which must make it complicated for other actors like Pip Torrens not to make eye contact with you if you're in their eye line or to even see you.
Yeah.
Poldark, Despard, Annis. Three men with known Jacobin sympathies.
Could be seen as hostile to the crown.
Precisely, Sir George. But two more pleasant matters.
Are you sure, George? Is this really what you wish?
Is it what I wish?
What was involved in sort of blocking those scenes and being aware of eye lines?
It was cool. What we did was put me in and out. So they sometimes would film the scene without me in order for a Pip to sort of react more naturally to the fact that there's nobody there. And then sometimes he would put me in so that they had both versions of reactions. But it was fun. It was kind of like being a fly on the wall. You know, you didn't have to be like, oh, so what's going on with us? Like, well, you know, you didn't have to have any dialogue or background. You were just kind of a spectator in your own scene. And it was quite nice. I liked it.
Do you see George as being sort of in a state of denial about her death and that these hallucinations are sort of his way of coping with grief that he can't confront?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the only way of coping to begin with is to imagine she's still alive. But he's convinced himself that she is still alive. So he doesn't know that he's hallucinating, or he doesn't know that he's in denial, which I think makes it all the more powerful when he realizes he's having a mental breakdown, or, you know, he's not dealing with this grief.
So George resigns his MP post. He closes up Trenwith. There's a sense that George is so heartbroken by Elizabeth's death, so grief-stricken that he's lost, as you say, his sort of grip on his sanity. Mm-hmm. Why do you feel he's hit so hard by her death last season, and why do you feel he copes in the way that he does? Is it all about control for George?
I mean, yes, you're right. I mean, he needs to be in power and he needs to be in control of everything. And as much as he loves Elizabeth, I don't think he was aware of how much he needed her until she passed away. And I think there's just a slight delay of how he's feeling. And I don't think a person like George ever imagined himself in this type of situation of grief and heartbreak. And so it's just a typical example of someone who's not in touch with their emotions and emotionally articulate, and being a man and being, you know, back in those times, and also powerful, you know. So in that way, I think Debbie's done a really good job of writing it, you know, writing this type of narrative for George, because essentially I think this is what happens a lot to people who are emotionally unavailable, and especially men, and especially men in power, because they don't have the wherewithal to sort of sit down and process, I think.
And to me, it also shows the fact that while this may have started out as a marriage of convenience, they end up being, by the end at least, sort of an ideal pairing. Sorry, Team Francis, but they are a much better pair, Elizabeth and George, than Elizabeth and Francis were.
Oh, yeah. I agree. And I've always said last season 4, was really fun for me and us, because it was the first time that I got to play a character in that show in a happy relationship, or in an exciting relationship where they were, you know, conquering the world together. And that was really fun for us because there'd been so much of the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that George harbors any sense of guilt over the way that Elizabeth died?
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think that he has any way of articulating it, which is probably why it makes more sense for him to just think she's still alive. I think everybody does. I mean, you know, everyone involved in her life. I don't know about Geoffrey Charles, but I know that Ross and George definitely feel guilty for how everything has gone down.
Do you see Elizabeth's presence here as fulfilling the role of George's moral compass as his conscience?
Yes, absolutely. And she was. That's what she was to him, you know, which is, again, another component of why I enjoyed playing her so much in the last series. I always have, but there was an extra add-on when she became his kind of, for lack of a better term, Lady Macbeth, but I mean, we weren't that bad, but you know, she didn't just sit on the sidelines. You know, she was a part of his decision-making process.
It's clear George's delusions, such as they are not going to resolve themselves immediately. What can you tease about where this Elizabeth storyline might be going this season?
I think that people will see an escalation in his delusions. And for Elizabeth, I mean, she's just a figment of his imagination. So that's up to George when he lets go of that. And whether he does, you'll have to watch and see.
Can we expect to see more of you in the next few episodes?
You can expect to.
What do you feel it would take for George to truly say goodbye to Elizabeth, to put her ghost to rest, as it were?
I mean, the first thing is obviously to deal with grief and to recognize the loss that he's had, and to sort of come to terms with the things that he feels guilty about. I can't imagine how people dealt with all these things before it was kind of acceptable to talk about. And, you know, the British on top of it. I mean, it's nuts how repressed these people must have been. So yeah, I think those two things are the steps to sort of get back to normal and then maybe find someone else.
That was Poldark star Hayda Reid in conversation with Masterpiece Studio host Jace Lacob. You can hear the entire interview and many more besides at pbs.org/masterpiecestudio or on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Coming up next time, Morwenna makes a bold request of her detested ex-mother-in-law.
Lady Whitworth, would you be so kind as to tell me how John Conan is?
I see no reason to account to you for the welfare of my grandson.
We'll do our best to cheer up the woeful Morwenna next time. And you can join us in our rewatching adventure here on Mining Poldark by watching the entire series on PBS Passport, a new member benefit from your local PBS station. You can watch select Masterpiece titles like Poldark, Downton Abbey, or Victoria as part of the Passport experience. To learn more, visit pbs.org/getpassport. You can also follow along with us on the PBS Masterpiece Prime video channel, available as an add-on service to your Amazon Prime membership. Mining Poldark is hosted by me, Barrett Brontes, and Robin Ellis. We're produced by Nick Anderson with help from Robin Bissett. Meredith Wheeler is our field producer. Tina Toby Mack is our sound designer. Suzanne Simpson is our executive producer. The executive producer of Masterpiece is Rebecca Eaton. Sponsors for Masterpiece on PBS are Viking, Raymond James, and the Masterpiece Trust. Poldark is a Mammoth Screen production for BBC, co-produced with Masterpiece.